Welcome to the Portage County Safety Council podcast. We hope you enjoy today's featured message.
Thanks for the opportunity to come speak to you today. I came on it since 2014, and we've spoke to the Portage County Safety Council every year, if not once or twice. So it's always a good opportunity to come talk to you. Typically, we speak in regards to preparedness activities for different individuals, facilities, schools, whatever have you. But today is going to be a little different. We have spoke on the LEPC in the past to this group, and it's been kind of a little 101 course about the LEPC. This is going to be a little different as we're looking more strictly towards the company side and what you have to do to comply. We're gonna dive into the LEPC and what we do here in Portage County, but this is all guided towards the facility and make sure you're doing your chemical reporting to the LEPC and your local fire department so we can raise our preparedness in the event you ever had an emergency. I'm gonna throw a couple disclaimers out there as I get started. One of the things is I live in a world of acronyms. So at any time, if I throw out an acronym, feel free to raise your hand and I'll try to clarify that. And I speak entirely too fast. So my grandmother's from Mississippi, she's from Tupelo. When I moved down there for the position with Mississippi EMA, she thought it would slow me down and it didn't work. It actually got a lot faster. So hopefully I do okay throughout this presentation. Okay, so who is Sarah? Sarah is not our colleague at work. Sarah is not our high school sweetheart. Sarah is the Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act, another fine acronym to say of all the different various things we're gonna talk about today. But just like it's in its name, it was an amendment and an amended CERCLA. How many people have ever been involved in CERCLA? All right, what is it? Anyone wanna throw it out there? Compensation and Liability Act, so another lovely acronym. And it amended it. CERCLA came out in 1980, and of course, through lessons learned and different events across the world in the United States, they said, hey, we need to do a little better. And obviously CERCLA down at the bottom is just a program through the US EPA to clean up hazardous waste sites across the nation. So these sites don't just sit there, keep compiling and causing human health issues. We can get these things remediated. And it separated it put a fund on the side to have funding available to state governments and local governments and the US EPA to clean up these sites. Well, through that amendment, it changed some things. You're gonna notice these key points down here below for the better. It set it up permanent remedies of hazardous materials waste sites, which is obviously a good thing. We wanna remove it entirely. Incorporated standards and laws from various states and federal entities during response. So if we're gonna come work in Ohio, we wanna make sure we incorporate Ohio's laws into our response and we work with the local community to get that place remediated. New enforcement tools. So if someone's out there acting erroneous and we're not getting this site cleaned up, we have new enforcement tools so we can come down as hard as we need to make sure this site is cleaned up and paid for. Focus on human health posed by a hazardous waste site. That's obviously always a top thing. We wanna make sure that our groundwater is not contaminated, what have you, that human health is a priority when we're cleaning up these sites. And then incorporated state and citizen involvement in the remediation process. A good example of this is something going on right now. With all the townships, the public involvement, the EMA, other county agencies that sit on the Ravenna Arsenal Restoration Board are called RAB. So this is a public involvement to the remediation process of all the munition sites that are out at Camp Ravenna, or sorry, CJAG, Camp James A. Garfield now. So we are heavily involved. We actually had our meeting last night in Charlestown Township. So a lot of different involvement between Portage and Trumbull counties. And then increased funding for remediation activities, which is always a good thing because obviously cleaning up these hazardous sites is not cheap. Now, in particular to what we're going to talk about today is a section of SARA, or what we call SARA Title III, which is the Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know Act, or EPCRA, another fine acronym. And basically, EPCRA was a focus on community safety following the Bhopal, India Union Carbide incident. Unfortunately, they said resulted in over 2,000 people being killed and multiple injuries. There is some people that project today that that number is closer to 25,000 people were killed due to a chemical emergency. And those effects are still going on today. Go feel free to jump on YouTube, Google that incident, and you'll find more than enough open source documentation to see what's going on there. And also opened up to the point that the public can now request to know what chemical hazards are in their community. So if you are living in Streetsboro and you're next to a chemical facility or Shalersville, wherever you are in Portage County, you can request to know what's there. So which is a good thing, because now you can increase your preparedness. If we do have an emergency and we're alerting you to do something, you're aware of what's going on and you can take the appropriate population protective actions. And basically, SARA established four main provisions. State and local emergency planning for chemical emergencies. Anytime you go to a chemical safety board video or whatever you're watching, you're gonna notice one thing. We didn't pre-plan, we didn't communicate, and we didn't know each other ahead of time. That is something we are trying to eliminate in Portage County, and we're trying to do the best we can to get to know each facility that does report chemicals in the county, and we'll talk a little bit about that here in the future. But it has also increased our preparedness at the local level to prepare for a chemical emergency throughout the county. It also talked about hazardous chemical handling and storage reporting requirements, which is the biggest reason why I'm talking to you today, is to make sure that you know if, or to find out if you know you are a chemical reporting facility. Do you meet that criteria? Maybe you don't meet that criteria, or maybe you want to report just to let us know that you do have chemicals, to be a friendly friend in the community. It talked about emergency release notifications. So if in the event you did have a release, what is a reportable quantity? What thresholds do you have to meet to report, and what time frames do you have to report? And then and the very last thing, which we'll talk about, but we won't dive too much into, is the Toxic Chemical Release Inventory, or TRI, which was a database set up based on 600 chemicals to where people reported what pollution controls and releases they're having. And it's a nationwide or national database people can look up and see what releases are going on across the country. So, Bhopal, India, Union Carbide, in the Mill, India, in Institute, West Virginia, big, large chemical emergencies. Those things don't happen in Portage County, right? Beautiful, sunny Portage County. We don't have those big emergencies. False. All right, here's a nice image. I'm not going to go and dive into where it was or who it was, but obviously you can tell from that picture we had a little bit of a fire. Inside that facility, you can see the high-pressurized cylinder tanks and then maybe some burn-up drums in the back. Here is another image of that, of different shelves. At one time, this facility looked like that. So if you look in the image over to the right, there's another facility that's actually that. So it's very large. Obviously, those drums are not in the best of shape, but that's what that facility looked like. And then here's an image of the shelf. So we're talking thousands of unknown chemicals on fire. So luckily enough, this was in a rural community, not a lot of population density, so population protective actions were limited. But nonetheless, we have these facilities throughout Portage County and the state of Ohio, because this wasn't the first time it's happened in Ohio. Just to give you an idea of the runoff from the fire suppression, this is the pH paper. So who wants to tell me what's on the right or the left? The blue one, what's that mean? Alkaline, right? We have a base, strong base. That's as far as blue as you can get. To the right, not too far away from that, is red, acidic. So we have a lot of runoff, a lot of different chemicals that were in this fire and had to be remediated. This actually met the threshold, because of different financial and litigation, to meet a CERCLA incident. So this became a Superfund site. The US EPA took over and remediated this site, as well as the back bay of what you saw of all those different chemicals. Just this, I think, cost $500,000. So just to kind of give you an idea, and they're working on various CERCLA and Superfund sites throughout the state of Ohio, but this is just an incident that happened here locally. The negative about this incident, we had no clue this facility was here. If you looked from the front, you would have never known this was a chemical facility. Never. So just kind of put it in perspective. The reason why you need to report your chemicals, if you do have them and if you're above those thresholds, is because this is a life safety issue. If we do have your information on your facility, we can report that. We can give that information to our dispatchers. If a 911 call comes in from that facility, they can bring up that information and share it with first responders before they even get on scene. Can you imagine a firefighter responding to this, thinking it's just a normal fire, and they don't know that they have thousands of unknown chemicals on fire? Chemicals and fire typically don't match. Multiple chemicals coming out of their containers mixing together on fire typically don't match very well. Lucky enough, we didn't have a loss of life that night in a first responder, but it easily could have happened. So just kind of put it in perspective, these things do happen. They happen right here in our home. So to dive into the various sections of SARA Title III, sections 301 through 303 was the emergency planning section, the kind of stuff that we have to do at the local level. It established the CERCs and sub-planning districts, or LEPC. CERC is the State Emergency Response Commission. It is the committee, has different various agencies on it, including Ohio EPA, but it's the state agency that oversees all the emergency planning and chemical reporting in the state of Ohio. The planning districts are outlined as the counties. So obviously there's 88 counties, so we have 88 planning districts. Sometimes you can get into a situation where counties are very rural, only have a couple facilities, so they combine counties. And we do have one incident in Ohio. So the planning districts, as the county, is your local emergency planning committee. Here in Portage County, the Emergency Management Office serves as your LEPC. We have a very active board, a very large board, but we contract with the LEPC to provide most of the work that has to be done. So the annual reporting, things that we have to do to meet our Ohio Revised Code 3750. It established the substances and facilities covered and notification responsibilities. Established local comprehensive chemical emergency response plans, emergency notification parameters and procedures, as well as emergency training and exercises. So when they learn that we're having all these various chemical emergencies and we're having this huge gap at the local level in emergency preparedness, SARA Title III look to close that gap and establish all these emergency planning going on in various different counties. Now, at the local level, we have the Chemical Emergency Response Plan. And to start off, it breaks down the facilities and transportation routes of extremely hazardous substance as well as a hazardous substance. So you're going to look at two different chemicals, EHS and normal hazardous materials, and we'll cover those here in a second. Emergency response procedures for on and off site, designated information and emergency coordinators in the planning district, so at the county level. Here in Portage County, I serve as your emergency coordinator. Patricia Corley, who is not here today, serves as your information coordinator. So when you send your tier two report in, which we'll talk about here in a second, that all goes to Patty and we load them into a software-based system through Ohio EPA. So we'll cover those here in a little bit. Describes local equipment and facility capabilities of responsible parties for them. So we're talking about like the Portage County Hazardous Materials Team, some of the other assets that we have to respond to a location. And all those are housed currently here in Ravenna as well as the city of Kent. Outlines evacuation plans, provides a training and schedule program for emergency responders, and provides an exercise schedule. So just kind of put it in perspective, LEPC receives funding through your reports, and we bring in almost annually near $20,000 in first responder training specific to hazardous materials. And we do have a pretty robust here hazardous materials team here in Portage County, and we've worked with a lot of different facilities throughout the year. And it provides an exercise schedule, and just put an example, we just did an exercise with Nestle in Streetsboro, Tabletop. We did that on September 20th. So we partner with our local facilities, and that was a simulated ammonia release. This little graphic is the front cover page of the Chemical Emergency Response Plan. This is the beginning listing of all the EHS facilities in the county. There's roughly 48 of them. Here's a standard operating guideline for the hazmat team. Here's our evacuation plan. Here's your chemical reporting. So if you report a spill, this is the form that we collected on. So just kind of tie it back into Portage County centric. These are what all these various documents look like based on this law. So how do we plan chemical reporting? OSHA regulates employers and maintains safety data sheets, or SDS. A facility is subject to submit a Tier 2 chemical inventory form by March 1st of each year. So probably within December, January, and February, we'll start receiving all those facility reports. Totally in Portage County, we receive roughly of 160 of them, and that includes oil and gas wells and production. So we receive lots of reports, and we got to load those into our programs and make sure, see what changes annually. A lot of documentation to go through. The biggest thing to know is that these are due by March 1st, but the report covers the prior year. So if you're going to report in 2019, you're going to cover the year from January 1st, 2018 to December 31st, 2018. So any chemicals that you had produced, stored on site throughout that calendar year gets reported in the following year. Tier 2 forms are submitted to the CERC, the LEPC, and your local fire department. I'm going to throw it out there. Why do you think they include the local fire department? Not everybody at once. No. Go ahead. Somebody. I didn't hear it. They're the ones that respond. Yep. Put out a fire. Absolutely. Simple as that. They're the first ones that are going to be on scene with our law enforcement partners to mitigate the situation in the first response roles. And then reports and safety data sheets are made readily available for the LEPC, fire department, and general public. So at any time in Ohio Revised Code 3750, we can request to the facility to have their safety data sheets, and you must comply with that and give it to us, including the public. So how do I know if my facility should be reporting? Typically, if you have to follow the OSHA hazard communication standard, then you're more than likely a Tier 2 reporter or a chemical reporting facility. If you use, produce, and store hazardous chemicals or extremely hazardous substance, and we'll tell the difference between the two in a second, and they are above or at the threshold planning quantity. So for example, gasoline at a retail gas station is 75,000 gallons, diesel at a retail gas station is 100,000 gallons, all other chemicals are 10,000 pounds or more. So notice the difference, we went from gallons to pounds. Everything you report on your Tier 2 report is in pounds. And there is a specific gravity formula that you have to do to figure out how many gallons of a product you have in pounds when you report. But the biggest thing to know is that when you're looking at hazardous substances, it's 10,000 pounds or more. When you get to the extremely hazardous substance, there is an actual formal list that's put together, and it's called the list of lists. And it comprises of roughly 359 chemicals that are actually designated as extremely hazardous substance by the US EPA. When you're reporting those, you're at 500 pounds or the specific threshold planning quantity, whichever is lower. So a good example is chlorine. Chlorine's quantity reporting is 100 pounds. So more likely the EHSs are going to be 500 pounds or less. Ammonia is 100 pounds. So those are just a couple examples, but those are EHS chemicals, and there's a specific list, and it looks just like this. So there is a Tier 2 facility identification form. It's on the Ohio CERC website, and I'll give you that website here shortly, and it puts the chemical names in alphabetical order. So all you have to do is look at this list. Maybe you have sulfuric acid. Sulfuric acid is an EHS chemical, and you're going to notice to the right the threshold planting quantity. If you're over that, then you're going to report it. So just kind of put it in perspective. There is no list of lists for hazardous substances. If you follow that standard and you have over 10,000 pounds, that is your threshold planting quantity, then you have to report that chemical. Is there any questions on that? Okay. Reporting mixtures and new chemicals. The facility has the option of reporting either the entire mixture or just the percentage of the hazardous material within the mixture. So a good example is if you have 100 pounds of a solution and only 5% of it is a hazardous chemical and due for report, then you report either 100 pounds of the entire solution or 5 pounds of just the chemical in the solution. So it's kind of a little bit of a trick, but you have the option. Mixtures that contain EHS must check the extremely hazardous substance box when you do your Tier 2 report, and we'll cover what a Tier 2 report is here shortly. But that's a big thing. Make sure that, yes, you may have a mixture, but if inside that mixture it has chlorine, then you still have to check the EHS box. New EHS chemicals brought on site must be reported within 60 days. So we'll say it's October 3rd. You bring on a new chemical to your production. You have to report that chemical, if it's EHS, within 60 days to the CERC, LEPC, and local fire department. If it's just a hazardous chemical substance over the threshold planting quantity, then you have to report that within 90 days. I know a lot of times different facilities get tricked up on that, and sometimes they report 120 days and apologize. And we try to work with you on that, but we try to follow these parameters as much as possible. I'm not going to dive into the exemptions. There's a lot of language on here. Just know that there's a lot of different exemptions like food additive, research laboratory, hospital, medical equipment, some baseline store shelving stuff like fertilizers that you can buy on a store shelf. And that's for retail. Some of those are exempted. This is all on the industry manual that you can get right online, free to download as a PDF. So you could take a look at that when you're possibly looking at reporting this year. Okay, Tier 2 reports. So you have two different options. You have paper and electronic. Of course, in 2018 and what will be 2019, we really prefer the electronic version. It's very easy to export and import right into our software. It already populates over last year's report. It already notices the changes. So we do encourage you to do electronic, and we'll walk through that shortly. But you do have the option to receive paper, and we probably receive 50-50. So some are paper, some are electronic. Obviously, we've already talked about it. You fill your Tier 2 report out, and you file it to the CERC, LEPC, and your local fire department. On the paper side, you have to submit EPA Form 316, which is a facility identification form. Basically, all your identification numbers, what your facility is used for, the name, address, emergency contacts. EPA Form 317 is Emergency and Hazardous Chemical Inventory Form. So this is actually where you physically report. We have 6,000 pounds of chlorine on site in this kind of tank. That's what all go on that form. You submit a facility site map. Something we're going to talk about with the site maps is try to be as detailed as possible. It really helps us on the other end to try to get a grasp of what's going on in your facility. If we have 160 some facilities that we need to visit, obviously we can't do that. We're looking at an office of three. So it's hard to get out and see every facility. So if we can get as much information from your Tier 2 report as possible, the better for us to prepare ahead of time. So take your time on a facility site map and make sure it's detailed so we can tell where all the chemicals are stored. And then you have your filing fees form. So you're gonna fill out the different forms and how much is you are due in fees, and you'll send the fees into the CERC. And we'll talk about fees here shortly. From the electronic side, the file report is electronic through what's called the EPA Tier 2 Submit software. Simple as this, you can go to this website. This PowerPoint will be made available to you. Mike is right? Right? So, okay. Or you can just simply go to Google and type in Tier 2 Submit US EPA, and it'll come right up. You could submit a paper copy or the electronic copy, report exported to a CD or direct email to the CERC@epa.ohio.gov. Or send it directly to this mailing address noted here below, the LEPC, the local fire department. And the biggest thing to note, say you are in Manaway Township If you're in Manaway Township, you may have a Streetsboro mailing address, you may have an Aurora mailing address, and you may have a Manaway mailing address. That doesn't necessarily correspond with your respective fire department. If you're in Manaway Township, your fire department is Manaway Shalersville. So if you have a Streetsboro mailing address, it does not mean Streetsboro is your fire department. Same goes for Brimfield. You're more likely you're gonna have a Kent mailing address or possibly a Talmadge or Mogador. Keep in mind that your fire department is going to be Brimfield Township. So make sure it's going to the right fire department. Is there any questions on reporting and addresses? Okay. So here's an example of the software online. We had a little bit of fun with it, but this is as soon as you bring up the facility, this is the first tab you're gonna see, and it's your facility name and addresses. All the electronic forms eliminate the paper forms that you had to do on the previous slide. So the facility name, Portage Bad Day Chemical. Sounds like a great place. Department's a manufacturing department. Report year is 2017 because I'm simulating it for 2018. Street address, 55 Evacuation Road in the city of Haswapper, and the fire district is Haswapper. So having a little bit of fun with it, you know. I don't know if you want to live in this community. The zip code's 44444, which is Newton Falls, so we can always pick on Newton Falls. Just the next tab, ID and regs. If we just move, let's see, location, ID, regs, you're just gonna move left to right when filling this out. Any Duns or Bradstreets, SIC codes, anything else that you have to use for your facility, these are where you put all those codes in. You're gonna check the mark if the facility is manned or unmanned and the maximum number of occupants. And then there's some other laws and federal regulations you may have to follow, and you're gonna check whether you have to follow those yet, yes or no, based on the laws that you have to follow. Contacts, pretty simple. You're gonna go to add contact. And here you go. So our first name is Reckitt, last name Ralph, and his address is obviously Evacuation Road, and you put all the point of contact information in here. I'm gonna stress to you that putting in a 24-hour number is very advantageous to us. So if we ever have a chemical emergency and it's 10 o'clock at night on December 23rd is where all those pictures came from, of course, right near Christmas, then we can't find your contact information. If you put it on the Tier 2 report, at least we can get a hold of you. So I know sometimes that where we go against putting our cell phone numbers or 24-hour numbers on there, we do encourage it because it's strictly used for emergency preparedness. So any sensitive information, we can redact before giving it to the general public, but it does help us prepare. But pretty simple, you just add a contact and then it populates to the sheet. There are some state fields. Here's some of the things. If you're an initial filer, you have to check this box. If you're updating annually or just doing your annual filing, this is if you get a new chemical, this is your annual filing. Total extremely hazardous substance chemicals, total chemicals on site. And then if the facility name has changed, you check the box, previous known as Portage Great Day Chemical, now it's Bad Day. And the previous owner was Reckitt Ralph. So now Reckitt Ralph owns it, but Reckitt Ralph was the previous owner. So had a little bit of fun with that. A good example of this is Nestle in Streetsboro, who previously a couple years ago was Millard Refrigeration. So it was a name change, the chemicals didn't change, still had the same amount of ammonia, but the name change happened. Attachments, this is where you're gonna add your site plan. You're gonna do descriptions of dikes or any other safeguard measures you have, and attach a list of site coordinating abbreviations. So if you wanna attach anything you want to, this is the bare minimum. You can attach as much as you want to help us prepare on the back end in the event you had an emergency. But simple put, you're just gonna click add, and just like adding any attachment to the email, this is how it's gonna be. Now you're going to notice the last tab is certification. This is where you sign and send. Before we get there, you need to add your chemical inventory list, which is up at the top. You're going to click that, and it's going to bring up this site. This is just an example. Simply put, you're going to put the CAS number, mark if it's extremely hazardous substance or not, chemical name, which you can look it up right here by the CAS number, and it'll automatically populate for you. And then you're going to fill out the parameters as accurately as possible of where it's stored. Pretty simple, and you're just gonna keep walking through that step until you add all the chemicals. Some facilities have 1, 2 chemicals, some have 12, 15, so depending on what they have. But try to be as accurate as possible. The biggest preparedness that we do is the chemical name, what state it's in, and how much you have, as well as what kind of tank it's in. So if it's in a large cylinder tank with pressure relief valves, we know where we can have points of failure, what kind of plume modeling we have to do. That's all based on this information. So try to be as accurate as possible to truly what you have. Here's a storage location. It's in tank room, building 305. So it's just an example. If it's in building 305, I need to be able to go to your site plan and see building 305 and know exactly where this tank is. mixture components. If it's a mixture, you fill out the parameters. For example, this is ammonia, it's pure, so we do not have a mixture. And then there's some other state fields. Location is confidential, or anything else you have to fill. We just skipped on past that. Okay, certifications. You're gonna go through this and we'll talk about fees, but we had three chemicals reported. Total fees was $340. Signature of the individual, the date signed, obviously March 1st, it's when it's due. And then you're gonna see a notes section. This is huge. When we went out and visited a chemical facility and they say, hey, by the way, during the winter months, we move our chemicals from this room to this room. We would have never known that unless we went and visited. So take advantage of this notes section and make some changes. If you have anything specific to your facility that you think we need to know to prepare, make sure you note those, and that's what we put here. During winter months, sodium hydroxide storage is moved from building 112 to building 342. So just as an example. Okay, filing fees. For industry, you have automatic $150 base fee to report. $20 per each hazardous chemical reported, and $150 per each extremely hazardous substance. Total you can report annually is $2,500, so you cannot go above that. So if you're a large manufacturer, which I don't think we have anything that big in Portage, but if you are that large, some big facilities in like Akron and Cleveland, then you're automatically gonna be capped at $2,500. If you do report late or received after March 31st, you're subject to a 10% penalty. Oil and gas, is there any oil and gas in here? No? Well, you do, you have a little bit of separate fees, and those are your fees there. Okay, having releases. Legally, if a facility has a spill or release that leaves the property boundaries, that facility, upon having knowledge and or delivery, has a duty to provide a warning to the LEPC, the CERC, and the local fire department within 30 minutes, okay? I promise you, in the middle of a release, 30 minutes goes by very quick. So we try to work with you on that, but that is the law. So if you do have a spill and you think it's at a reportable quantity of that spill, which is right in these books, then report the release. If you don't think you met it, but you're unsure, it is, in my opinion, always better to report the release. The last thing you want is Ohio EPA to come in and try to find something. If you reported and you said, hey, after the fact, we didn't meet a threshold, we reported anyways to be safe, there's no harm, no foul there, okay? So it's always more advantageous to report the spill. Okay, so some lists to help you with spill reporting. Extremely hazardous substance under 40 Code of Federal Regulations, Part 355, CERCLA, oil and gas, petroleum crude oil, 210 gallons into the environment or a visible sheen on navigable waterway of the state. We very rarely ever have a hazmat spill that's not by a creek or water, I promise you. Those two go hand in hand for whatever reason. So if it gets to any water, it will easily become a navigable waterway of the state. The EPA will tell you that. But if you want to look up the different spill reporting, here's the different laws that you can look up. And the biggest thing, a lot of times, most of our spills are oil and gas. So you're looking at 25 or gallons or more into the environment. Biggest thing is for a facility, if you have a spill, it has to get off facility grounds. So if you have a liquid and it's below reportable quantity, then you don't have to report. If you have a spill of a liquid and it gets off grounds, you have to report. If it's a vapor, you have to report. If any gas releases to the air and you're trying to figure out the pounds that were just released, say ammonia releases, it's better just to report, okay? But if you want to look up those specific pounds that have to be released, this is where you look it up. The biggest thing to know is a written follow-up report, I apologize, is due 30 days after the incident, and it basically tells us how it was remediated. Whether you have a contractor that comes in and cleans up the spill, does whatever, a 30-day report is due to the CERC and the LEPC. And that allows us to know that that incident is closed. Then we have these all the time, a lot of times from the transformers and things that explode during high wind events. First Energy will send our reports and other small spills. Toxic Chemical Release Inventory, or TRI, it's basically is a resource for learning about toxic chemical releases and pollution prevention activities. Facilities in different industry sectors must annually report how much each chemical they manage through recycling, energy recovery, treatment, and environmental releases. And they have another list specific to the TRI program that is 600 plus chemicals, and they track these nationally. Those forms, TRI forms, are due by July 1st of each year. Some of the penalties for not following EPCRA, potential federal fines of $10,000 to $25,000 per day. secondary violations of $75,000 per day, criminal penalties up to $50,000 or 2 to 5 years in prison, and citizen and local, state, and federal government suits. So obviously that incident we showed you is still going through litigation, but on the federal side, not locally. But obviously it's always more advantageous just to file your report and comply with the law, and it helps us prepare. Some of the stuff additionally that we do at the LAPC at the local level, we have LAPC committee meetings. Anybody who is a tier two reporter, if you want, it's an open public meeting, you can come visit. It's every even numbered month, and the next one is December 5th at 8:30, and it's located at that address, which is the Emergency Management Office, which is on the rear end of the Portage County Sheriff's Office. We also do what's called site-assisted visits or facility visits. This year, we've done General Aluminum in Rootstown, Deerfield Farms, R.E. Carroll, Hydrosol, Swage Lock, Nestle Refrigerated Foods, and we have BWR Chemicals in Aurora scheduled for the end of the month. The site-assisted visit program is basically to come out, get to know you better, understand the hazard to the fullest, because a lot of times your tier two report says this whole list of chemicals, and it looks like the apocalypse at this facility. And then we go visit, and we see how much safety programs you have and redundancies, and we get to know you, and we see how you drill with your facility staff and emergency communications, how you work with the police and fire department, and it mitigates that hazard tremendously. So it's just something to think about. Your tier two report looks one way to us until we come visit. So, and we're getting ready to meet here probably within the next couple weeks, and we'll schedule who we want to do for the next year for facility visits. Like I told you in the very beginning, is most of the chemical safety boards is we didn't know each other, we didn't plan, we didn't communicate, and we didn't prepare. That's the last thing we want to have to tell the media here in Portage County. So we're doing our due diligence as much as possible to visit these facilities, understand the hazard, and prepare for them. A lot of times we may go to a facility and we think it's extremely hazardous. By the time we leave, there is no concern. Sometimes we go to a facility and it is hazardous. And then we'll go meet at the fire department and say, hey, we need to do a little more extensive planning for this location in the event you have a release. It all starts with you, the reporter. If you don't report, we don't have the information. We can't prepare, loss of life. Hopefully not. If you do report, we have the information, we can visit, we can try to close those gaps and prepare as much as possible. The hardest thing about hazardous materials is there's no perfect plan. You don't know what the chemical is gonna be, you don't know where the release is gonna occur, you don't know what's gonna release from, you don't know the weather's gonna be like. So all those variables change every single time. So they are tough to plan for, but we do the best we can. We do a lot of first responder and industry training. Just right now, December 10th through the 12th, we have a HAZWOPER certification class, and that is open to industry. I believe the last registration we had was 17 people. So if you have people in this room, it is open to you that need the HAZWOPER class. Here's your opportunity. It's going to be at Kent Police Department. Beautiful new police department, excellent training room. Go check it out. But this is get your certification. That is free, paid by the LAPC, and I believe that course was $8,000, just to put it in perspective. We do exercises. We did a tabletop this year. We did a functional last year, which is actually physically moving assets. And then we'll have our full-scale exercise coming up. Either we may do a full-scale this year or next year. We're still working on that planning. But we just did Nestle. We did a train derailment in the city of Ravenna in 2014. So we've done a whole bunch of various different emergency situations and exercises. And the last thing we do is public education. So you'll see us at the fair. You'll see us give speeches like this and other different public education events to get information out about the LAPC, about the EMA program and emergency management and everything we do. Here's some of those links. So if you go to Google, type in Portage County, Ohio, go to the emergency management link, you'll have a whole section on the LAPC. Also there is our emergency operations plan. You can read through the plans, they're all open source documents. The CERC website, as well as the US EPA website about EPCRA. So if you wanna get down to the nitty gritty and read through the statute, feel free. It's something I always love to do, light reading material. And that's it. So is there any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. To learn more about how your company can earn up to a 4% Ohio BWC premium rebate by becoming an active member of the Portage County Safety Council, please visit our website at www.portagecountysafetycouncil.wordpress.com. The preceding information is for entertainment purposes only. Views expressed may not reflect the views of any affiliated or sponsoring individuals or organizations. Listeners should carefully weigh information provided and seek advice from an appropriate professional before implementing. Listener discretion is advised.